There was an island in the middle of the Pacific. They needed someone to baptize these people. And then the pastor went over, but you know, his ship got shipwrecked and he died or whatnot. And so there was all these ships going to Hawaii and from Hawaii to these islands. And so they eventually said, hey, we need an ship of our own. And so it started with children. Children's Sabbath schools were the ones like, we're going to do this. We're going to pull our money together. And then adults caught on. It just became a thing. Like, and then it's just very exciting. And then they eventually got to 20,000. They got the boat and they got like, I think it was two missionary families. And then rather than going to Hawaii and coming back down, they could just go straight to the island. Mm-hmm. And then after that service, I mean, they serviced the South Pacific and they just, you know, created all these churches, planted all these churches. And it was just a really great model for Sabbath School Mission.
The Lineage Journey Podcast, unscripted conversations that aim to help you on the journey of discovering your lineage. Join us as we take a deeper look into past lineage episodes and see the lessons we can learn for today.
Pastor Justin Kim serves as an assistant director of the Sabbath School and Personal Ministries and editor of the Young Adult Inverse Bible Study Guide for the General Conference World Headquarters of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. He has also been an overseas missionary, local church pastor, and a department director for communications, men's ministry, and campus ministries. Pastor Kim graduated from a Catholic high school, majored in sociology and biology at the Jewish Brandeis University, researched at Harvard Medical, studied theology and pastoral evangelism at the Seventh-day Adventist Theological Seminary, preached in more than 30 countries, and is a friend of books and an enemy of cilantro. A husband to Rachel and father to Noah and Nathaniel, he is also the host of the Inverse Telecast on Hope Channel and co-founder of GYC. My name's Adam Ramding and we are here with the Lineage Journey Podcast. Today we have a guest with us, a good friend of mine. We're going to introduce in just a few moments. He comes to us from America, and we're very glad that he's able to join us. His name is Justin Kim, and he works in a particular department within our church organization that specializes in what we're going to talk about today. This episode, we're looking at an aspect of church life, of spiritual life, of religious life, that has been a bedrock of our church and Christianity, you could argue, for the last several hundred years. Justin Kim works as an editor of one of the Bible study guides, the Sabbath School quarterlies that we have as a church, the Inverse Study Guide. And we're very glad that he's here with us today. So Justin, welcome. Glad that you could join us.
Hey.
Maybe you just want to give your exact title or your job or exactly what it is you do.
Yeah, I work at the General Conference World Headquarters for the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And my title is Assistant Director for the Sabbath School and Personal Ministries Department and Editor for the Inverse Bible Study Guide.
Okay, so the Inverse Bible Study Guide, just maybe explain that a little bit to some of our viewers who don't know what that is. What is the Inverse Study Guide? What ages is it for? And
yeah, so I guess we'll get into it, but we have a Sabbath School Bible study curriculum for the world church, and there's different levels. And Inverse really hits the young adult level, division, category, section, whatever you call it, from 18 to 35, where it's considered, quote unquote, young adult. Hmm. And that
so
title is Inverse.
You edit a book?
Yep.
Study book that goes for 18 to 35-year-olds around the world.
That's right.
Okay. Right. Excellent. So today we're going to be talking about Sabbath School. Now, Sabbath School is you could say it's an Adventist term. If someone wasn't an Adventist, how would we define Sabbath School?
It's like Sunday school, on Saturday.
There we go.
Some people might not be familiar with Sunday school in today's context. And it's basically you have church where you have a worship service and you got all the singing and the worship going on. But then there's also another portion of church where you sit down and you study. You study the Bible and a little bit more didactic or a little bit more interactive in nature. And, you know, Sunday churches have it on Sunday morning and on Sabbath. Adventists have Sabbath school.
All right. So It's something we do around the world, right?
Hmm.
Now, I've heard it said that the one thing that unites us as a church is Sabbath school, that we all study the same book, we study the same, every 3 months rather, we get a new one and we do this around the world. Now, how much would you say that that is true, that that unites us as a church, or is that just a good catchphrase?
It's definitely true. The way that our church is structured, it's awesome, is that there is only one Seventh-day Adventist church. And there are local congregations and local manifestations of this world church, but we are in our ecclesiology and in our church structure, we have one church. That may sound like really like, what's going on? That doesn't make sense. But when you look at, and if you study organizations in other churches, you have your local town Baptist church or your local county Methodist church. And that is an organization in itself, right? It's not really connected technically with the other Methodist churches around the world. So our Adventist church, we have our church manual that unites us. We have our doctrines that unites us. And then in Bible study, we have our Sabbath school that unites us. So whether you're in, you know, Lancashire, I don't know, I'm thinking of an English town.
Lancashire.
Or Lancaster, Pennsylvania, or Lunzhou, China, we're all studying the same, if you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you're studying the same Bible study guide at that particular week or time of the year.
So you've traveled quite a bit around the world, maybe just bouncing off this. What's it like to just walk into another congregation and then you just kind of, it's kind of,
Yeah. It's pretty bizarre and awesome at the same time, because, you know, there are places I've been into the world and I don't understand the language, but, you know, 9:30 or 10 o'clock or whenever they have Sabbath school, they open up their Bible study guides. And it's funny because the cover is like nearly the same with whatever their script or whatever lettering that they use. And I don't have any idea what they're talking about, but you can kind of tell that if the study guide's on Jeremiah, you know, they say Jeremiah, you're like, whoa, we're studying the same thing and the same passage or same whatever. So it's cool. It's a cool experience.
So it does unite us.
For sure. For sure.
Now, when did Sabbath school start in the Seventh-day Adventist Church? Now, we obviously were formed in the early 1860s.
Yeah.
And there was the Seventh-day movement before that. That's only when we were incorporated as a church. But when did Sabbath school start within the Adventist movement?
Yeah. So our church started in 1863. The mission conference was 1861. And so Sabbath school, the beginnings of it was even predated even our church organization in 1850s, 1852. James White put some Bible studies together for kids. And he realized, hey, we need to do something for our kids' education, for their Bible education. And he's the one that kind of started the whole thing. Now, we've had Sabbath school before that, but the formal curriculum was started in the 1850s. To be honest, the Adventists took it from the Sunday keepers, right? Sunday churches. Sunday school started in the 1780s by a guy named Robert Raikes from England. Yeah, there's some good things that come from England.
What denomination he was?
I don't know. But Robert Raikes there are all these kids. There was no formal education back then. Formal education was for the elite. Mm-hmm. And he just wanted to teach them to read the Bible. And so he taught them God is love, God is one, just these simple words, and taught them to comb their hair, to take a bath, to sing. And, you know, all Protestant churches had Sunday schools in the 1700s and 1800s. And the Adventists just followed that tradition because our Adventist roots, and we were an ecumenical movement, right? Not a capital E, but a lowercase e. Mm-hmm. We had Methodists and Baptists and Presbyterians and Catholics all coming into the Adventist movement. And they are all used to having Sunday schools and just kind of naturally transitioned to a Sabbath school. Yeah.
Is there anything about how Adventists did Sabbath school that was different from Sunday school?
So Sabbath school naturally evolved through the decades. And it's a pretty fascinating study. Sabbath school was like we have it today in the 21st century is not what it looked like in the 1900s or the 1800s. When it first started, it was primarily for children. And it was very, very didactic, very Q&A. You have a question and answer, and the answer was rote. And back then, a lot of education was just, you know, rote repetition and whatnot. It eventually evolved to a Q&A where the teacher would ask a question, and then the adults or children had to find the answer from the Bible, and they could not give any other answer except a Bible verse or a Bible chapter. And so there were these Bible study guides that were printed, and these were the precursors to the study guides we have today, and they would just have questions, right? Just 20 questions or 30 questions. And you would go and teacher would just ask a question and people just open their Bibles and try to find an answer from the Bible and try to satisfy the teacher. And each of these Bible studies got compiled together, and they were the precursor to our quarterlies that we know today.
So it wasn't... Was it always in a kind of a quarter system, or did that kind of something that...
I don't know. I know that the children's systems were had repeated curriculum like we do today. In our church archives, we do know that there were quarters. I'm familiar with the late 1800s and onward. There were about four quarterlies every year on different topics. And it was actually until the 1970s that the format got changed and the Q&A system disappeared, and it was more of a you read, and questions were still there, but it was more a reader response, right? The reader reads, finds a text, and then, you know, fill in the blank or matching or whatnot. And that's still the format that we have today from the 1970s and onward. So it's kind of evolved through the years. There's other aspects that are different, like in other churches, maybe mission, fellowship, some of these other, like 13th Sabbath. 13th Sabbath is definitely an Adventist term. Branch Sabbath School was an Adventist term, slowly disappearing. But in the early 1900s, Sabbath School was just exploding. And the cool thing was that there was actually... in some parts of the world, more non-Adventists than Adventists
attending Sabbath school.
And so they created their own structure. It was the International Sabbath School. I forget what it was, administration, organization or something like that. And there was all these people super active. And one church in California said, hey, there's so much activity going on. Let's go out and collect offering for missions. And that became a thing, and it just spread, and all these local Sabbath schools were collecting offerings. And eventually the organized church got together and they said, hey, we have a big goal. And this is the SS Pitcairn, you know, the ship that went out into the Pacific. And it was $20,000, which back then was, you know, a ginormous sum. And this became to be a thing. And then the general conference said, hey, we're going to put mission and mission offerings under the auspices of Sabbath School because this is so awesome. So it's really cool that one local church does something, it catches, and it becomes, it's definitely this grassroots momentum building activity. And now when we think of, you know, mission offering, we think of a top down kind of the church, whatever, but it's actually started from the ground up. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So like that... In what do you say? Injection of mission into Sabbath School was really a, in some ways, uniquely Adventist, or at least we kind of put a format to it.
Yeah, the 13th I think Sabbath we systematized it, and we were a growing movement, and you know, administration on top. You know, we're living post-70s, we tend to be anti-authoritarian, we tend to have a little doubt against, you know, the suits upstairs. But back then, the administrators, and still today, administrators would have a bird's eye view of everything, and they see where mission is weakest. And they have the directive to take where mission is strongest and then redirect those resources to that which is weakest. That's why they're at the top. It's not a power thing or whatnot. It's they're able to see that. And that's why the church has kind of, in a sense, grown evenly throughout the decades.
Because we have the worldwide structure that helps to...
Yeah, if we didn't have missions and the mission offering system and whatnot, the richer parts of the church would be far more advanced than today.
True.
And then the weakest parts of the world would probably... There would be no mission activity going on.
True.
So the disparity would be much, much higher. Can we do a better job? For sure. But we can definitely pinpoint that activity to that fruit to that activity.
You could also maybe make a connection between the growth of, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, like Sabbath School mission, mission offerings, 13th Sabbath, with maybe the last 30 years in our church, the growth of the I'm not sure what the name is. You probably know that the mission department.
The Office of Evidence Mission.
That was started in the last 30 years or so. That really exploded the growth as well, I'm sure. There's a connection between them.
Yep.
So that kind of, maybe that, I was going to ask the question, but maybe you've already answered, like, what role do you believe the cyber school played in the growth of Adventism? And it's...
Yeah, so for global missions, for sure. I mean, you've got, you know, the mission offering component, but there's also this other aspect of evangelism and outreach. And there's this thing that I mentioned before called branch Sabbath schools. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have church plant specialists back then. It was every Adventist was a church planter. It was like in your DNA. Mm-hmm. And if you have a church in your local village, your natural inclination was want to plant a church in the village next door. So you start off as a branch Sabbath school. And so you and a group of other people would visit that village and contact some people and, hey, do you want to have a Bible study together? Mm-hmm. And use your Sabbath school Bible study guide. And that was kind of your small group in that village. Mm-hmm. And it was your branch Sabbath school. Eventually, if enough activity and enough members were there, that became a company, and then it graduated to a church and being financially viable. That's kind of died off. But you look at areas in the world where church growth is highest and there's a lot of activity, there is still this branch Sabbath school mm-hmm. kind of infrastructure going on.
Or a Sabbath school class may go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's evangelism is kind of baked into their DNA. And then there's other parts of the world that are a little bit more, you know, refined and sophisticated, and they bring in church planters. And still, the Lord is still blesses with that. But then you have specialists, right? And so then the average church member doesn't feel this burden to be a church planter. And I think there's something a little lost in that we can gain back from our history.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm. So we've looked at how missions is connected. We see how Advent, Sabbath school missions, as you mentioned, it kind of started with a local church as opposed to being a top-down.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mention the name of the church or...?
It was somewhere in California.
California, and they're the ones that kind of remember. Took on the SS Pitcairn, right?
Yep, that's
and
right.
And what was... That was a mission boat, was it?
Yeah, so my understanding of the story was there was an island in the middle of the Pacific, and they needed a pastor to come over. And the real story is super long and super complicated, and there's so many nuances.
It goes back to the bounty ship.
Yeah. And then that's also another, you can bring up someone from the Pacific who knows that's a full story. But they needed someone to baptize these people. Uh-huh. And then the pastor went over, but you know, his ship got shipwrecked and he died or whatnot. And so there was all these ships going to Hawaii and from Hawaii to these islands. And so they eventually said, hey, we need an Adventist ship of our own. And that was what the $20,000 was for.
Hmm.
And so it started with children. Children's Sabbath schools were the ones like, we're going to do this. And we're going to pull our money together.
Mm-hmm.
And then adults caught on. It just became a thing. Like, and then it's just very exciting. And then they eventually got the $20,000. They got the boat. And they got, like, I think it was two missionary families. And then rather than going to Hawaii and coming back down, they could just go straight to the island.
Hmm.
And then after that service, I mean, they serviced the South Pacific. And they just, you know, created all these churches, planted all these churches. And it was just a really great model for Sabbath school mission. Very, very inspirational. Mm. So still today, like the SS Pitcairn is like the icon for Sabbath school missions all around the world.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to Australia. They've got a museum of missions there.
Oh yeah.
In next to Sunnyside. And it's fascinating to see how much growth took place in those little islands that probably a lot of it dates back to. Yeah. The SS Pitcairn that went out.
Yeah. And then you look at the offerings that they gave for Sabbath school back then, and when you compensate for inflation and whatnot, I mean, we've been giving, I don't know about it in England and in Europe, but in the United States, we've been giving a dollar since like forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we gave according to what they gave back then, we'd be giving $100 every Sabbath to Sabbath school missions. But for some reason, we still keep and just give a dollar, and we give a dollar to our kids, and they just a dollar into that bucket. And in terms of value, Sabbath school mission offerings is slowly declining, especially in the middle of a pandemic. People aren't meeting, churches aren't meeting, and the biggest hit has been world missions, Sabbath school missions. People aren't going to Sabbath school. So
I was just trying to pull up. I saw a statistic on Instagram this week.
Mm.
That showed not sure the original date, but the original part on the graph, which was, I think, about 100 years ago, showed that the percentage of people's giving that went to mission back then was around 40%.
Mm.
People gave to mission, whereas now, and for the last 30 years or so, it's been hovering at the 5 to 10 mark.
Mm.
You know, so we've gone, so I mean, there's still a significant amount of money that goes, but as percentage,
yeah,
if we were at the 40% that we were at 100 years ago,
yeah,
which really got our church going and enable people to buy these huge institutions and land all over the world and so on.
Yeah.
You wonder how much more we could be doing now.
Yeah, I mean, the average millennial, I mean, we spend more on Starbucks coffee and streaming services and apps, you know, on a mm-hmm. weekly basis than we do on Sabbath School Mission. I mean, it's really sad where we're at.
It's true. So yeah, we've kind of looked at the mission. We looked at a little bit of the background of where missions came into Sabbath School. We've looked at how it started with, obviously, Sabbath School was an inheritance we got from Sunday School.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday School was started by, you said, Robert Raikes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Raikes, I believe, was an Anglican.
Mm.
The Anglicans of, in a sense, he's got that Protestant background. And it's something that unites us as a church. So we're just going to take a little break now. We'll come back and have a couple more questions afterwards to look at how, maybe apply it a little bit more to ourselves, how Sabbath School and the individual Sabbath School and the church, how we can improve our Sabbath School experience, our Bible study experience, and maybe look at some of the resources that are out there. So thank you guys for listening. We're going to take a short little break now, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Lineage is a non-profit organization kept running by generous donors like you. Support us today on patreon.com/lineagejourney.
History shapes identity. Identity shapes mission. And a clear mission determines the trajectory of your future. Knowing where you come from is key to understanding your present purpose and your future mission. Lineage Journey is a series of videos that will take you on a journey through time, discovering the key people and events that have shaped the Christian faith. From the Waldenses to Martin Luther to Zwingli, from England to France, Switzerland to Germany, the light broke over the horizon of Europe, piercing through the Dark Ages and then spread out over the world. As the United States of America rose to supremacy, Christianity formed the bedrock of this great nation. And so from the Great Awakening to the Great Disappointment and beyond, Lineage follows the journey of God's church throughout time, immersing you in the places, the stories, and the people through whom Christianity has shone the brightest. Join us on a journey through time. Follow us on social media at Lineage Journey or check out our website at lineagejourney.com. Lineage Journey not only produces video content, but instructive and illuminating resources to teach young and old about Christian history. Lineage has produced an educational coloring book for people of all ages. It includes original artwork from Ashley Bloom, highlighting the various heroes of the Reformation. Each scene has a matching story, and there are also QR codes to connect you to the website for more information and to watch the videos. There are also fun facts and memorable quotes to accompany the scenes to color in. Designed for young and old alike, get your copy now at lineagejourney.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to our Lineage episode here with Justin Kim, that's looking at the history of Sabbath School and how that applies to us today. And we've just looked at the connection between Sabbath School and missions. And sadly, we've seen that there's been a decrease in recent decades or years between mission offerings and as a percentage of our income. But is there something, some counsel or some advice that says that when a church gives more to missions, it actually doesn't hurt them, but helps him.
There's this quote, and I don't know where it's found, but you guys can search it on internet where it's found. But there's this phrase she uses called reflex influence. And the more that we give to foreign missions, the more that we give to foreign lands and the mission work, she said that God blesses the local work, the domestic work, the home work. The way that our church is structured, there are criticisms that our resources go to the weak. How come they don't? Why can't we become like the great what's it called? The mega churches out there, and with the pastor associate and the five associate pastors and 20 youth pastors and whatnot.
Kids pastors and everything else.
But she gives that promise, saying that God blesses in other ways. And when we look back at the history of Adventist mission, we have a much more robust and a stable mission structure than other organizations do. And I think that's just God blesses in ways that are intangible, that we really don't see superficially.
Mm. Do you think, and maybe it's not even a question for us to answer, but I guess the thought comes in our mind, do you think the church in the West struggles more now because we're not doing as much of that? Or is that like maybe too much for us to draw that parallel? There's maybe other factors at play.
Subjectively, I totally see that. I see that in terms of the quality of Western spirituality. We have more, it could be said, more temptations, more stuff, but because we're not as active, we have more time, we have more resources, more technology, but yet we're not as evangelistically or spiritually active as other parts of the world. So there's definitely pros and cons.
True. What would you say? I mean, you've been to a lot of different churches around the US and different parts of the world. What would you say is the value of a good Sabbath school to firstly to the local church as a collective unit, but also to the individual? Like why would you even have that? Because, for some people, I just go to church to hear a sermon and sing some songs. Why do I need that other aspect too? What's the value of Sabbath school?
So the Sabbath school structure, the Sabbath school ministry has been likened to the heartbeat of the church. That people used to say that in the 50s and 60s, not so much anymore. And it is the primary engine by which a local church moves forward. We usually, if we're not careful, we can depend on the pastor, depend on the elder, quote, the spiritual people of the church. But really, Sabbath school utilizes every single person. So first, it completely flattens the church structure, where every person is a soul winner. Every person is a teacher. Every person can contribute. And so every Saturday morning, you go to church and you can interact with somebody else, with your small group, with your class, and talk about the Bible. And not just talk about, you can teach, you can learn. And that breathing or that interaction needs to take place rather than just the passive experience. Worship is necessary also. But it is a passive experience. You're not actively, you're listening, and you're it's a corporate experience. And there's a role in our spiritual development for that. But where's the interactive and the back and forth? And maybe I would even say slight, gentle disagreeing back and forth. A little bit of the dissonance, and then and learning together. We've lost that art. So that even in some bad Sabbath schools, you don't have teaching. You don't have that going on. You just have a pre-sermon. You have preaching going on there too. And that's a violation of the innate principles of Sabbath school. The cool things about Sabbath school in a larger picture is that every local Sabbath school member knows they're part of the world church, and they contribute to the world church, and they can partake in being part of the three angels message that goes to the whole world. They, rather than just, me ministering to my people in Columbia, Maryland, I'm, witnessing to people in Bogota, Colombia as well. And not every Christian can say that. There's an eschatological character to your church participation.
Very deep word then.
Well, we all need this kind of last day linkage. And no, I don't mean that like, oh no, Jesus is coming soon. And there's this freaking out kind of component is Jesus said that the gospel go to the ends of the world and then the end will come. So that's to every Christian disciple, every follower of Jesus has to have that eschatological pull, that last day connection. That doesn't make us better Christians. That doesn't make us more advanced Christians. That's just basic Christianity. And we often are, the modern Christianity is to lose that and be like, hey, it's just about your experience, you now, and you, how God speaks to you in the moment, and God's with you, and that's it. And for sure that we need that too, but we also live in this timeline and Jesus's ministry in the heavenly sanctuary. There's this fluidity. Anyway, so Sabbath School puts us as an active, practical manifestation of that theology.
No, I get it. It's part of our commission. It's part of our mission. And I think, like you've been saying, that, or to in my words at least, the Sabbath School is the opportunity for the church to collectively study. And a biblically literate church is a much more powerful church.
Yeah,
much more useful church. Yeah. And our biblical literacy, we increase not just by listening, but by.
Yeah.
And I think you mentioned as well, like this, we have the opportunity to ask questions.
Yeah.
And I think Sabbath School is also that time where some of those, we don't like to use the word a lot in our church, but some of our doubts or some of our, I'm not quite sure
what it that should verse be means. A safe place for those doubts. Yeah.
Like, does it really mean, you know, and someone can say, well, I've thought that too, but let me.
It should be a breathing space and kind of an incubation for beginner Adventists, the beginner Christians. We've lost some of the why do we have Sabbath School, and we don't know the history of Sabbath School and its missional history to allow for that.
If someone here is listening and they attend Sabbath School, or they have a Sabbath School in their church. Maybe they don't attend because it's pretty dead. I mean, I've been to some Sabbath schools where you walk in and the teacher's talking about everything under the sun, like how to make homemade pizza or what they did at work that week or who knows what, you know, like.
Yeah.
But what can someone who's listening do to improve their Sabbath school if it's not got much life to it as either an attendee or as a teacher?
Yeah.
Because some people may not have the opportunity to teach because the teacher won't give up the spot, but I don't know.
So that's a really good question, and that's kind of what our department seeks to help. We have a collection of resources. You can go to alive.avanist.org. Alive is the General Conference Initiative to revitalize Sabbath School all around the world. It's nothing new. People are looking for this secret, and if we just do this, then it'll be like the best Sabbath School ever. It does take work. It does take time. But there are some basic ingredients that make a pizza good, right? And so there are basic ingredients that make a Sabbath School. One is studying the Bible. That sounds so elementary and simple, but like you said, there's so many Sabbath schools, they don't open the Bible at all. They rather read the quarterly or the Bible study guide, rather read the Word of God. So first ingredient is Word of God. Second one is mission. We've talked about mission a lot. And finding ways to make that real and connect and using technology and whatnot. And in our globalized world today, that's not a difficult thing to do. Third is fellowship. Is a way to find fun ways to get that small group and small class together. That is a part, to visit each other in their homes and to call each other. And especially in the midst of a pandemic, or to our shut-ins or whatnot, it's always good to have, it's not the pastor that should be doing all those things. It's the Sabbath School group. And then lastly, it's evangelism and bringing your friends or your neighbors. This is where VBS, Vacation Bible School, Children's Ministries, it all comes together in this ecosystem working together to allow families to come to church and their children are taken care of. And then, you know, spouses can have their time to also explore spiritual questions. But Sabbath School is really, really an active place for all everyone's ministry to be entertained. One way to get all this going on is to attend your Sabbath School Council in your local church, that is the highest administrative body for Sabbath school. It's not the church board. It's the Sabbath school council. Some churches may not have a Sabbath school council. Or maybe that's the problem. But Sabbath school council comprises of the pastor and the elders and teachers and whatnot. And they talk about what's the purpose of Sabbath school. Are we meeting what we're trying to do? How can we improve? It is a venue where you can voice the superintendent. Sabbath school superintendent is there to help teachers be better teachers. And unfortunately, there are some bad teachers out there. They need to be trained. Maybe the classes are too big. Maybe classes are too small. Maybe the classes are, you know, and there's all these, every church has their issues. But that Sabbath school council is the body by which these problems are troubleshooted.
What resources are there? Like, are they...
Yeah, all I can think of is alive.adventist.org. There is the Sabbath School Handbook. There is Councils on Sabbath School work by Ellen White, and she talks a lot. And it's funny because the issues that she was going through are the same exact issues we have today about teachers speechifying, students and teachers preparing for Sabbath School on Friday night. And we know that happens because the Adventist.org website gets a bunch of hits for Sabbath school on Friday night all around the world, and it follows the time zones when Sabbath hits. And it's pretty funny. So the GC knows what you do.
Some people are logging in to find out.
For sure. For sure. But, you know, preparing for on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's something to that. It does raise the quality. I mean, it's like good cooking. You don't microwave something like a minute before you're going to eat it. Some good stuff. You get some high quality ingredients and you let it simmer for hours.
If you do like, even if you did 15 minutes on a Sunday. You can still think about that.
For sure. It's in your subconscious. It's still percolating in there, and the good teachers know what to do. Yeah, and then there's a lot of, you know, our church really glorifies the gift of preaching. Yeah, and for sure, and preaching is definitely necessary. Our evangelists and our pastors, but there's also the gift of teaching. Not necessarily a teaching at an Adventist school or teaching children's ministry, but the gift of teaching adults. Like there are gifted teachers, and how do we massage that gift? How do we, you know, fertilize that gift to be more fruitful? This is where a Sabbath school, that platform allows our teachers to shine. And a master teacher is rare, but once you see it, I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. Our Lord and Savior was a master teacher, you know? So
good teachers. When you hear a good teacher that just knows how to bring people in, and it's great.
It's an art. It's an art form.
It is. Yeah. It is. Now, what about you mentioned earlier that you're the editor of the Inverse Guide.
Yep.
Maybe just as we're kind of drawing to a close, give us a little bit.
Yeah. Well,
you said we've had the same format since the 70s with the adults, but this Inverse has taken a different track, right?
Yep. So you can go to inversebible.org and all of our stuff is online, but you can also get the hard copy. And the format is a little different. It goes through the seven stages of Bible study, and in our digital age, everything is touch. It's almost anti-sensory, and there's something cerebral and neurological that happens when we write stuff out. So we encourage, you know, we take Sunday, Monday, Tuesday out, we take the dates out, and it's more of a devotional guide. And we encourage students to write the Bible verse out and to circle, underline, get a journal, and interact with the text, with the Word of God, ask questions about it, even get angry with the text, like this doesn't make sense, or this totally doesn't. Why is God this way? Or, man, I've studied this for a million years, I've never seen this. And then you write these observations out. And then there's also QR codes in there where you actually have a lesson, and it gives you background. It gives you a lot of questions, a lot of prompts for you to reflect on your personal life. There are also other verses. So each day has a different way of approaching the same text. But I think on Wednesday, what's traditionally known as Wednesday, there's all these other texts that you can go and reflect. There's a whole day where we look at what Ellen White has to say or about the topic or about that Bible verse. And then the last day, we have just a bunch of questions that you take those questions and you bring them back to your small group. They can use for your campus or for your family devotion or for your Sabbath school. And and just ask those questions. Mm-hmm. And it's not meant to be reader response, like, hey, what does John 7 say? Or, you know, what are the three things that verse 9 says? It assumes that you read the text and wants to take that text's principle to the next step deeper and apply it. So we started in the last quarter of 2019. It was 40 years, which the CQ, the Collegiate Quarterly, was around. 40 years is one generation, so we figure now it's in time for a new generation. Uh-huh. And it's digital and it's analog print together. It's not either or, you actually need both. And the digital is awesome because there's no unlimited space and you can just, you know, scroll forever. There's video, whatnot. But there's some power in paper and pen too, like the ancient scribes.
What's been the feedback you've had from?
Yeah, so the pandemic has been horrible to around the world biologically, but the pandemic has been very good for Inverse. A lot of young adults on lockdown wanting to do some, you know, project, learn a new language or learn whatever at home. And like, man, let's just get into the Bible more. Hmm. And so the response we have around the world is that, especially in Australia, Canada, Europe, North America, initially was like, this is awesome. This is exactly what we're needing. Since then, we've had different translations now in the Spanish-speaking world, Portuguese world, Africa, Asia, the world's catching on. And there's these small young adult groups popping up on Zoom or YouTube or whatnot. They're just, you know, mimicking what we're doing. Hmm. We have a video program that we do from our headquarters at the church. And I know you can't see me, but I'm Asian. I got Asian eyes and I represent Asia. But we also have Sebastian Braxton from the Caribbean, Israel Ramos originally from the Latin America. We have Siku from Africa, Jonathan Walter from Europe. And so we all get together. And then so we're talking about the Bible all from different perspectives. We're all millennial to a certain degree, that we're international. We're third culture kids. And then we disagree and we agree and we talk about the Bible. And it's funny that format is being reproduced all around in these local churches. Everyone's got a camera now. Everyone's got, you know, their phones. And it's just awesome to see when that local Christian Adventist is activated and they just go all out for God. Especially in Sabbath school, it's really inspired you to see.
That's great. Yeah, I know at least in our conference, the part of the world Inverse really had a huge boom in the pandemic and a lot of churches picked it up and have taken it on and are continuing that way and don't want to, do anything else.
And the support from England has been overwhelming and very well appreciated. And it was a huge form of encouragement for us in the beginning and continues to be so.
Well, that's good. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing on the birth of Sabbath School, where we kind of came from, how mission was a key part of Sabbath School and how it needs to stay a part of Sabbath School. It's not something we can separate and it really does need to stay together. And that quote that you were looking at earlier, at least you referenced, is from 6th volume of the Testimonies, page 27. Clive Coote just messaged it to me. And it says this, it says, the whole missionary work will be further advanced in every way when a more liberal, self-denying, self-sacrificing spirit is manifested for the prosperity of foreign missions. For the prosperity of the homework depends largely under God upon, and that's the word you mentioned, the reflex influence of the evangelical work done in countries afar off. Mm. That's fascinating, really. Mm-hmm. Sean. There's a direct connection between the homework and what's done and what we sacrificed to give further afield. So just want to encourage our listeners as well to not see, I know it's important, our churches and how they're viewed by their communities. And that seems to be the catchword these days. Our church is a community church and we've got to reach out to our community, which we should. We should be a church that is relevant to the community around us. And we should be a church that's meeting the needs of the community. But at the same time, not to forget the far off communities and those further afield. So I want to encourage our listeners to understand that there's a connection between that and our local blessing is dependent upon being a part of the wider global family and the worldwide church and the worldwide movement that we have. And it's just a blessing to be a part of a a church movement that's connected, that there's cohesion to, mm-hmm. and that there is system and order to as well. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for being a part of this. Thank you, Justin, for coming and sharing. And we pray God blesses you with the Inverse guys.
Thank you.
What was that website again you mentioned?
InverseBible.org. And the other one is alive.adventist.org.
Alive.adventist.org and InverseBible.org. Mm-hmm. So those of you who are listening, you want to get into the Bible more, quarterly guides, take a look at those websites and there's resources there. Thank you guys for listening. We're going to have upcoming episode of the Lineage Journey podcast coming up. We have other aspects of church history, Adventist and Reformation that we're going to be looking at. But thank you for joining us and thank you for being a part of this podcast.
Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Lineage Journey is supported by your generous donations. Did you know that you can donate on a monthly basis, any amount, from $2 to $100 or whatever you decide, through patreon.com/lineagejourney? Your donations go towards the cost of producing our varied content, and we thank you for your support.